Welcome, everyone, to the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast by Fantastic Geek, the official, unofficial voice of the Marvel Cinematic Community. My name is Matt, and joining me, as always, is Pete. Hello, Pete.
Matt, you should have brought cupcakes for episode 216, Afterlife, which is sponsored by Coulson's Cupcakes. When you're looking to recruit up-and-comers from the science division of S.H.I.E.L.D., mix up a batch today, although not as effective as a makeup sandwich, but we'll get to that a little bit later.
Pete, do you think that Coulson sent Mike Peterson like a whisk attachment to help kind of to help with the batter there?
I'm not going to respond to that. Debrief. We begin tonight's tease in Honest Eddie's used car lot. And here comes the hard sell, Matt. For Honest Eddie believes that Phil Coulson is in the grips of a midlife crisis, and I find it highly ironic that this episode airs a couple days after Clark Gregg's birthday, maybe the most youthful man in Hollywood.
It was such an unusual opening for the series, and I'm sure that was intentional. But it felt like we were watching another show, which I really kind of liked. That it was, you know, where are we? Who are we with? When are we? What is going on? And really an effective way to hook us into the episode.
Is this real life? But no sooner does Coulson explain he's looking for an off-road vehicle and explain that he's about to pay with cash, which of course makes him classy in the eyes of the used car salesman. Then Hunter drives up with a Jeep, the very same vehicle Honest Eddie was prepared to show Coulson. And Coulson's a little concerned about winding up on S.H.I.E.L.D.'s radar, given that they're about to steal this car. Their assets and their bank accounts have been frozen. But as Coulson explains, sorry, Eddie, the tiger's been loose for a while, and he stuns him.
It's a little hand of the writer, you know, to be that prominent hunter, you know, kind of not even essentially, literally stealing a car. But, you know, it's all in good fun. I think, you know, to hold the reality of a story so strictly, particularly in this portion of the story, would be unfair. It's a wonderful way to jumpstart things, to really say, hey, they're back in the U.S. They're back, you know, on their on the road to rescue Sky, to fight the tail section of S.H.I.E.L.D., etc. And with that, you know, we're off to the title card and off to the races.
Act one begins with Sky and illuminated acupuncture pins.
I'm sure that's what all the fancy Hollywood people do.
Yes.
Joking aside, it was a really effective way to say this is a place of old traditional ways of doing things and new ways of doing things. And it's old-timey acupuncture with some sort of new blinkety-blink thing. You know, it didn't require an explanation for why those pins lit up, but it was fun nonetheless. It was a good way to just kind of quickly say, we are somewhere drastically different from what you know.
They lit up, Matt, because of special effects. But Gordon explains that Sky is safe, that she's been there for 2 days. She cannot, however, move. And another individual there explains that's because these acupuncture pins are healing her. He says it's kind of like microwave popcorn, and the analogy doesn't quite come through. And then introduces himself as her transitioner, and this is the character of Lincoln, played for us by Luke Mitchell. And given that he's appeared in a number of things like this before, it's not exactly going to be a one-time gig.
You know, Pete, his presence on social media certainly has increased as they've been filming some of these episodes, as some of the other cast members, particularly Chloe Bennett, have been interacting with him. So, I mean, I don't think it's quite spoilery in my anti-spoiler eyes to, you know, to have been aware of an actor who's coming to the show. And it's nice that finally the character of Lincoln is here.
Are your anti-spoiler eyes, they must be like Gordon. You must, when you watch something, you know, have... It goes back and forth as an effect, Matt. One second it looks like they literally just put like makeup over his eyes, and then other times it looks blurry like they're doing it digitally. But that's how I imagine your anti-spoiler eyes to appear.
You know, Pete, it's actually more similar. Well, while that's not a bad analogy, it's more similar to the third internal eyelid that Vulcans have. And when a spoiler comes, I can't control it. It just comes down. But the side effect is, just like Gordon, I see things differently as the writers intended it. Boom, drops the mic, except it's expensive, so I won't.
Yeah, that's sad. Your lack of a gift is sad. We catch back up with the shield, real shield, actual shield, whatever we're calling them now, people. Gonzalez and Bobby, and the upshot of that discussion there is they believe, at least Bobby does, that Coulson is a reasonable. Then Gonzalez comes into contact with Fitzsimmons, who he refers to as the ones who got away. Rumor was that Agent Weaver was even bribed by Coulson with cupcakes. But the subject of the box is broached here, and that forced their hand. They had to take it out of play. What's in the box, Matt? Fitz believes it might be their favorite recipes.
Indeed. And Pete, considering your Hydra sympathies here, I'm not surprised that you skipped over what I thought was one of the most important references that Gonzalez made, which is he calls Sky a thing. And this notion that there really are these superpower folks that are separate from, you know, the normal contingent. And I wonder if that's kind of seeding for future episodes. Also, Pete, and perhaps this is too small a thing to be a story seed for later growing, but kind of got the impression there from some of the dialogue that Gonzalez might not trust Mockingbird 100%. I'm just kind of putting a pin in that one for the future, just in case Mockingbird triple agent ends up becoming a thing. But I felt like they didn't quite roll with it long enough to be anything more than just character interaction, but wanted to point it out nonetheless.
Well, just point of fact, Matt, she already is a triple agent. She was Hydra, then she was Coulson's shield, now she's Gonzalez's shield. So she is on her third agency. I believe you're referring to her becoming a quadruple agent.
Wow. Yes, fair is fair. You can't argue with that.
Yes, will she have nice flow charts at Hydra. We know where everybody is. But Gonzalez explains there are no prisoners at new original recipe shield, and that exit protocols are the same. And Leo Fitz, as he was referred to by his first name by Gonzalez before, says he will start packing his things. Gemma would have been won over with some sweets there. And Gonzalez explains to Mockingbird that this is loyalty to a man, not to S.H.I.E.L.D., thereby making it problematic.
I really, really enjoyed how Edward James almost was able to walk this extremely fine line where he's trying to win over Fitzsimmons with his charisma, and he's being the happy dad that we all want. He's telling them and us and everyone, you can do it, and it's a big smile. And I have no doubt that Mr. Olmos is kind-hearted and genuine and so on and so forth to those that he cares for, but somehow the character of Robert Gonzalez came across as doing his darndest, and it wasn't overacted, it wasn't underacted, but it didn't feel authentically acted by Gonzalez, because indeed he was putting on a little bit of a show of like, hey, team, hey, let's all go do this thing, rah, rah. And just amazing that Olmos can pull off acting as Gonzalez, acting as a nice guy that he isn't.
Coulson and Hunter arrive at the scene where Sky was abducted after she had revealed her powers in the greatest show of them yet to Mockingbird and to Agent Acevedo, who sits this episode out, but he is alive, I can tell you. Hunter finds the bloody tree shard there and knows that something went on. They go to the videotape, Matt, and what happened?
That's where they learn that the Gordon has taken Sky. Although, Pete, I do take slight exception with your idea of calling her abducted, as she's reminded, I believe, in a little bit. Yeah. She asked for that exit.
Yeah. To their eyes, the abduction is what I meant, because they had said, you know, Hunter said, what was she abducted by, aliens?
Not entirely wrong in that there's alien DNA, but I suppose they were just going for the laugh there, not something too deep.
And some people, Matt, go willingly to the aliens.
That they do.
They do. So no trails, no clues have previously been left by Gordon when Coulson and company have tracked her, and he's lamenting that he has lost Sky. Meanwhile, Sky is back at the compound. We know yet not where. And she's told, however, by Lincoln that she's back to normal, that they have flushed her systems. And when she asks if she can get word out here, she's told that only Gordon can contact people outside. He does, in fact, explain, though, that the place where they are is called Lai Shi, which has no translation, but that they call it, Matt.
They call it Afterlife.
Ooh, he said this thing. He said this thing.
That's the name of the episode. You know, I usually am the one taking any show that we podcast. Daredevil podcast starts this Friday. Any show to task for exposition. Shows get a big out when there's a new person in a new place talking to the person who's going to introduce them to the place. And here, that's exactly what's going on, and I really appreciated it. We're able, with all this savvy exposition, to get told this is the place where only some who are ready get chosen, but everybody's ready, and there's training, there's preparation, you know, there's all this information, and it's nicely presented to us.
As we start Act 2, the idea that this Lai Shi may be Chinese, Sky wonders, are we in China? To which Lincoln does not answer, wants to know if she is a prisoner. She said that she was alarmed when she was awakened and she was naked, but he explains that this is merely a way station, that he is from Cincinnati, where he is a medical student, and he is brought here when he is needed. But what is happening in Lai Shi has never happened before. These descendants of others are looking at Sky, and he explains that there is only one person every few years who undergoes this process, that she did it without permission or preparation, and she did it, quote, old school, Matt, with a diviner in a Kree temple. So she's like OG Kree.
OG Kree. Love it. Hashtag it, people. Amidst all that exposition is that introduction, as you said, or the act opening with, you know, are we in China? Nobody really knows where we are. I found that to be a really unsettling way to start things. Maybe it's just because so many of us, it's ubiquitous. You take out your phone, you open up your Maps app, and you know where on the face of this earth you are. And I know that that's obviously not everywhere, but, you know, most places with a cell signal, you can now just have access to some of the greatest maps ever made in the history of the species. So to kind of have this idea of they are somewhere, but no one knows where they are except for one person, just a really creepy way to introduce what is otherwise supposed to be, welcome to our happy village, where some people are going to get chosen, some people aren't, but all kind of are yin and yang, and everyone is calm and here for learning and knowledge and beauty and all that. Kind of very, you know, there's a snake in the Garden of Eden type thing.
Well, you know, it's funny. We're in a village of people being trained and, you know, procurement for people with gifts received from blue people. And, you know, all it made me think of was Smurf Village.
Okay, it made me think of Othersville from Lost. So I guess we're all making our references to great television, Pete.
We are. So with this idea that Skye has done this differently comes some jealousy, but she admits she didn't want this. She wants to know if Raina and her father, Cal, are there. But Lincoln promises her that they are not and that no one will hurt her.
The idea that there potentially are these multiple places, which I mean, well, obviously we'll learn a bit about Raina. I suppose what Lincoln says could be true for Cal. But that notion that because of Gordon, this community can be so incredibly fragmented. That too is something I find just to be a quietly unsettling detail in the background. So I assume that's all on purpose. So kudos to the production for kind of with a couple of lines really kind of drawing out a sense of dread in what is otherwise supposed to be this wonderful place.
Back on the helicarrier Iliad, Gonzalez goes to see May and talks to her about the GH325 transmissions that Fury was injecting into Coulson and all the other various orders that Fury issued Coulson's shield. And the subject of trust, Matt, in particular, over this second run of the season, this second block of episodes, has very much been an issue. And Gonzalez wants to know if May is loyal or if she's stubborn. And she says that the shield she is loyal to and Coulson, it's the same.
I wonder if the genesis of this, you know, shield part two, Gonzalez-led shield, etc. I wonder if the genesis is perhaps a realization that if you're going to go down this path with Skye and Inhumans and look ahead to future movies and, you know, Skye as your every man, every woman now transformed above everybody else, so on and so forth, what do you do with everybody else? And this is a way to keep everybody else kind of in the story at large by essentially creating a new at-large story. And it just works. It really, it's not just our love for Edward James Olmos. This is a really compelling storyline because every time Gonzalez is being critical of her in this scene, I felt like he was laying bare honest sins. This notion, you know, Coulson was not trustworthy. He didn't trust, you know, he didn't trust himself. He was ready for May to be, you know, for May to put a bullet in his head, Coulson was. How do you argue against that? Now, of course, we don't want to because we love Coulson and we love the show the way it was and the way it might be, continue to be, so on and so forth. But it's just an incredibly effective scene saying this works because we enjoy it because it's a TV show, but this is an institution that is not working the way it should be.
It's all true. And let's remember, too, Matt, it was made official today that the directors of Captain America Winter Soldier would be directing Avengers Infinity War 1 and Infinity War Part 2. But, you know, what just started filming?
Captain America Civil War.
Right. And we know that coming out of Avengers Age of Ultron, things will not necessarily be hunky-dory. We've already laid the seeds for this split that will happen amongst our superheroes. So there's ample opportunity for choosing up sides.
I mean, I have no idea what's happening next week except for the return of one character, as mentioned in this episode, but we'll get to that in due course. The notion that the show may be considering at this point that we're viewing, I don't know, you know, where they're at in the course of considering such things for a production, but the idea that you could keep this split going for another year in some sort of fashion to somehow lead into the movie, which might mean keeping around, you know, Gonzalez and keeping around Mockingbird, which, you know, is a fair enough bet, and keeping around Mac, you know, the latter of the two having been part of the show all season for the most part. I'm okay fundamentally kind of semi-reinventing this series. Not that it was broken in the past, but, you know, keep it moving forward. Don't look back.
Well, look at the stable of recurring characters that we've built up through a season and two-thirds.
Yeah.
You know, when we get... You consider the number of episodes that Reyna has been in to this point. I mean, she's a semi-regular. And then you look at the reappearance the first time this season of Mike Peterson tonight and what that could mean. And, you know, we know we're going to need other, you know, superheroes. They can't all be, you know, Captain America and Iron Man in the Civil War if they're going to broaden that conflict. You know, so, all right, maybe, you know, Deathlok is over there. Ah, I shoot my missile at you, you know. You got to fill it out somehow. I mean, there's rampant speculation that, you know, Daredevil's going to make the cut. But, Matt, it's not just about the superpowered people. It's about the people on the fringes of that. And who stands to gain? What kind of chaos is going on because of that?
And for our listeners, if you have not read the Civil War comic, I mean, I'll say series, you know, it was interspersed through some of the ongoing titles and you know, some one-shots and things like that. But it is so peppered with the minutiae of the Marvel Comics universe that for casual fans such as myself, it's kind of like, you know, oh, who's that? Or, oh, they have a relationship. The notion you could tighten up that story and populate it with Marvel television characters, if only in a scene or two, if you're just going to have some sort of, you know, I don't know, the group scene as, you know, the Captain America people are trying to figure out what to do, and you could have Daredevil and Mike Peterson and Sky there, again, if only, you know, acting as kind of glorified extras or glorified supporting characters just for that role. It would be so absolutely fantastic because their 5 minutes in a 2-hour movie is going to have much more impact than, look, there's Muscles Guy who, okay, can we have more Captain America, please? As might be the case from, you know, a 10 or 15 comic storyline.
It's a great time to be alive, isn't it, Matt?
It sure is. And let's just hope that podcasting Daredevil doesn't kill us.
It won't. Gonzalez, however, is upset that Coulson's pet tried to kill 7 of his agents. May, however, really indicts Hydra here, explaining that was the impetus that created Sky, that weaponized her, you know, they have a job to do and they shouldn't be wasting it on a witch hunt.
Witch hunt. Which is distracting from that chase of Hydra. Again, it's a good point, but, you know, references made to, you know, yes, fine. This was as a result of bad guys, why Sky's been changed. all because Coulson was listening to a voice in his head, which gets back to condemning us, the audience, for kind of being so supportive of Coulson. And it's just this wonderful, dramatic place to be. And even though not for nothing, we know Coulson's going to win at the end of the day. How we get there is a bit of a mystery to us, Pete. I know to you, you have the pile of DVDs sent surreptitiously, and you know, links sent in the middle of the night and all that. But it is a fantastic injection into the S.H.I.E.L.D. portion of this story while we're dealing with superpowers elsewhere.
Interspersed during this conversation is Mac and Bobby reuniting, and Bobby explaining that there's a lot of bad blood out there. She doesn't want to be involved, and Mac is really coming to see that as well.
By the way, Pete, insofar as Mac is tall of stature, bright of mind, and big of muscle, you might say that you know, he is a man who is quite super in his masculinity. So in this scene, it's a bird in a plane with a Superman.
So Gonzalez is talking to May and explains that Coulson should be on the index because of what he's gone through. And he also says that she ought to know, given what went on in the report that he holds up, which specifically goes into the details of what happened in Bahrain, where Melinda May became known as the Cavalry.
I really look forward to them finally resolving that. I am okay with super long story arcs, but that's not this show. This is a show where, Coulson started carving at the very end of last season, and within 10 episodes, it was completely done with. In fact, less than that, it was like within 8 episodes, it was like, oh, it's a map. Cool. The brain pressure is gone. Let's follow the map. It's the map. It's the map. So this is a show that gives you payoffs quickly. And that's what I'm accustomed to for the show. Come on, Bahrain, baby. Let's get back to that flashback. Ooh, Pete, the person who had to be put down, who was powerful and out of control. Do I sense the potential for guest actor?
You do.
Ooh, that could be fun. Who could it be? It could be, I don't know, Patrick Stewart. Or it could be I don't know. It could be Lou Ferrigno.
Yeah, it's Lou Ferrigno. Or his son. Oh, wait.
I don't get the joke.
His son was already like in a scene earlier in the season.
Oh, right.
They made a big deal out of it. Lou Ferrigno's son in the background. Back at the safe house, Hunter breaks out the whiskey and the shot glasses, with which Coulson wonders aloud if he travels with. But still, Coulson really kind of beating himself up over losing Sky and S.H.I.E.L.D. in the same day. He gets to talking to Hunter about Gonzalez, that he's a good man, that he had run into him at the Triskelion a couple times. And the way that this has all gone is not really the way he had hoped.
It's a really nice scene. I think just because Hunter and Coulson together, there's a warmth of the both characters exude. I suspect a warmth that both actors bring to the characters, and to put them together in a moment where they can kind of pause, they can let their modest amount of hair down, and you know, just men's men in the cabin drinking some booze. It was an opportunity for the story to speak to the bond that these two must have as characters in their present situation, two against an army of 100, and just saying, hey, you know, as reference is made later on, you know, it could be Bush and Sundance. It's just this notion of, hey, here we are doing the right thing, doing as men should do. Let's see what happens. Here's to men.
Speaking of doing the right thing, Matt, Simmons has kind of come around and is working with Bobby to figure out what's going on with what has been formerly known as Fury's toolbox, this cube.
Yeah, and I will admit, I went for it hook, line, and sinker. Maybe it's because, you know, I've painted Simmons as a metaphor for all sorts of discrimination in the real world. But, I mean, here's my notes. And Simmons drops a hint. It's not a tech solution. It's a lab solution. Then capital letters, traitor. I completely believed, hey, Simmons, as the one who's, you know, who was told by Agent Weaver, you, Gemma, you can help us. Fitz, you stay on the floor because we have a problem with the Scottish and all that. But anyhow, you, Simmons. And Simmons has kind of been like, look, here's Mockingbird. You know, she's tall and has blonde hair. She must like me. I want to be part of this cool club too. No, she continues to use her mind, Pete. That is why Simmons is one of the great female characters of this series.
And just as Lincoln is showing Skye to another bedroom, her fourth in a week, and not the Lincoln bedroom, but a bump.
Well, it is nice that he's showing her the way, that Lincoln is a real navigator.
Mine was better.
Marginally.
The subject of the gloves comes up, which he refers to as inhibitors, that they have complicated her process here of moving forward, and that tomorrow he's hoping to see what gift she was given. She refers to it as a curse, and he makes clear that the transition is irreversible. But Matt, it's pizza night, deep dish. You know, Gordon brings it from Chicago.
I found that to be a very curious scene, and I'm not calling baloney on the show, although initially I did on Twitter, and I'll get to that in a moment. The notion that now these gloves have been taken away, called inhibitors, kind of said, you know, your powers are going to the left, and these gloves take them to the right, therefore we're not going to do these gloves anymore. I was just a bit surprised. Again, I don't have super in-depth knowledge of the character Quake from the comics, but Quake's gauntlets were a thing, and the fact that, you know, they kind of toyed with them for the last two episodes, and now that toy has been taken away, presumably for good, if she's going to learn, you know, mutant, you know, Yojimbo from her mother, et cetera, et cetera. I was just a bit surprised that they took that away. Second, I was initially surprised, you know, Skye being told, oh, it's irreversible. It's the DNA. Oh, and she was so upset. I on Twitter said, hey, the show's just trying to, you know, juice up the drama here. A number of people responded and said things along the lines of, no, she's been told that, but she wants to hear from these people, hey, here's your out, because we know what this is and we have experience with it. And she's been hanging on to that hope. And now the smartest people for this type of problem, you know, in the world have just told her, or at least one of their representatives has said, nope, there's no way out. You have to stay this way. It's shocking because she had been hoping for the other alternative. So that works for me.
Lost in the scene where she deflected the bullet and then sent much of the forest hurtling towards the real SHIELD agents, was that she had the gauntlets on when she was taken away. Matt, how no one could think right now that that is also some way to keep tabs on her with some kind of chip or a track. I really don't know why that wouldn't enter anybody's mind.
That's a good theory there. I'm slightly suspicious since you are a spoiler piece. But much like life at afterlife, you know what the rules are, and you know not to question them. But I could kind of see it going either way. You know, is Simmons going to sew in a tracker for her, you know, to track her friend, or is she given orders to do it, or does she think it's just prudent in case, you know, the unexpected happens, that sort of thing? I guess something else for us to put a pin in for future episodes.
But Matt, before we can delve further into that, SHIELD has shown up at the safe house and Coulson has invited them.
Love how this scene is presented, where Hunter is just waking up to a noise. What's going on? Just that feeling that we all get where you wake up, wait, what, you know, somebody's up to full speed and I'm not, what's going on? And then to be told, Shield's here, I invited them, boom, act break. Just a wonderful way to break the act.
So as Act 3 begins here, Hunter floats the possibility of surrender. And Coulson explains here that no, they're going to go out there and they're going to use icers only. They have a battering ram, so it's going to take an hour for them to get through. This place was, however, built to withstand the Hulk following back up on that handprint that had appeared in Sky's time in the cabin.
Did you notice, Pete, that as the battering ram is against the door there, the wood has been chipped away to reveal that octagonal metal, which at least answers the concern from last week. Oh, wait, it's all metal except for this creaky wooden door.
Right.
I don't have an answer for the windows, but I'll tell you what. Last week I had a question about the windows and the door. They answered the question about the door. I will concede that the windows are blah, 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 and they're equally protected. Sure, fine, that works.
Why would the Hulk break through a window, Matt? Come on, he's a beast. But Bobby is talking about May here, and that the idea of irrelevancy is brought up with Gonzalez. The safe house alarm has been triggered, and that Coulson has done it. He being, of course, too smart to allow this to happen. The question of why is raised.
Gonzalez shows Coulson respect. It's not the respect of an equal. It's not the respect of someone who has made the correct choices. But there's no lack of acknowledging Coulson as, can I say an X factor, Pete? Is that going to get the 20th Century Fox lawyers after us? I mean it X with a lowercase. You know, just this notion of Coulson is really resourceful. And the fact that he would call attention to himself like this, that's weird. And they need to be careful.
I've conferred with Fantastic Geek's lawyer, and I'm told that we can say an EX factor, as in he is the X director of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Fair enough. if that's what the lawyer says, then fair enough.
It's hard to parse through all this legalese, Matt. Almost as hard as the transition process at Lache. And of course, there's what I called Chekhov's transition room, Matt, that in the tour of the grounds, we don't use that one anymore. We're not going to go in there until the last act or second to last act.
That is a good catch. That hadn't quite occurred to me. I mean, the fact that it was like, look, there's a thing that we're not going to use. It certainly stuck with me, but not enough to say, oh, of course we're going to return there, to anticipate it at that moment. Good old Chekhov, always working for us.
Of course it's stuck with you, because there's a woman in there with all sorts of spikes sticking out of her.
Ow!
Yeah. It's at this time that Sky is shown Lincoln's gift. He explains that he can make all of the cells in his body emit electrical charge. And at that point, he even lifts Sky. Matt, sky's the limit.
Yuck, yuck, yuck. Yeah. But you know what? A fun little reveal there. Although a quasi-reveal, because back in that scene where I think where it's, you know, oh, what, you know, it's reversible, Sky, in that scene, he uses the word we at a certain point where
it's occurred. Irreversible, not it's reversible.
did I say it's reversible?
You did.
I do apologize. But anyhow, in that scene, he uses the word we in a way that it occurred to me that she should have picked up on that if she wasn't so flustered. So I'm not kind of blaming, you know, the writing. I understand why she's flustered, but he's including himself in the powered. And I was a little unclear, you know, oh, so does he have powers? And the fact that there's the reveal here shows things to be consistent. And, you know, it's a power that is also one you can do many things with. Is it just electricity? Is it different energies? You know, it's kind of, it gives you leeway for the story. So that's always a bonus.
And he urges her not to walk away from this opportunity, although that line rings kind of hollow given the fact that the transition is irreversible. I want to say there he was speaking more of the transition process and the idea that she would be guided, chosen to be guided by someone here to really kind of nursemaid her through the discovery and control of her powers.
Interesting word there, nursemaid, given that her mother is not far away in that really fantastic reveal. But we're getting ahead of ourselves.
Back on the Iliad, Mac calls Fitz Turbo. Fitz explains that his friend Mac used to call him that.
Uburn.
But Mac explains that he was always his friend. And with Simmons scanning away at Fury's toolbox here, it is only a matter of time before she figures out what's going on now that she is, air quotes, helping Real Shield.
I thought that this was a really effective way to sell the deceit, because, you know, Fitz is somebody who shoots from the hip emotionally, and we know where he's standing in this conflict. So for him to quickly go to the hollow pool table and, you know, bleep, bleep, bloop, bloop, and to, you know, be ready to unmask how she's going to do this, or cut her down to say it's not going to work, or to essentially to lead to that big showdown where he actually gets to touch the cube. Yeah, I bought it. This is a series of progressions where, with this fake out, it's something that I bought until the very end, and I suspect a lot of people did as well.
Definitely. And at the same time, Coulson and Hunter are preparing here. They've on borrowed time as they're about to get some visitors in the safe house, down to minutes. Coulson explains that he had a 21st century Howling Commando kit made for him, and then wants to know if Hunter would like to play cards.
That fake out, which then happens with the holographic Total Recall kit, really, really fun bit of storytelling. This is what Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is all about. Fun action adventure, you know, some gadgets thrown in, characters that we believe in. Would have liked it if somehow it ended with holographic Coulson saying, "Get your butt to Mars. Get your butt to Mars." But I suppose we can take the Total Recall connection only so far. But I mean, what a fantastic way to overpower 4, 5, 6 guys by getting the drop on them with a technically complex but conceptually simple plan.
They had a better hand, Matt.
Indeed. Indeed they did. That's a metaphor, kids.
Meanwhile, at Lai She, they cannot divulge the location, at least Lincoln can't, of Raina and Cal. There's talk of elders, and we see Cal, Sky's father, for the first time, grunting away in the very same room he was in the last time we saw him, the same room where Gordon came to be seen for the first time, adjusting to his new powers after the Terrigenesis. Cal's hands are bandaged. They've been feeding him. They've been keeping him. And not even Matt the decency to give him a window.
Pete, have they been beating him, or has he been raging against the walls?
Feeding.
They definitely have been feeding him. He did not seem to be too appreciative of the what was on the menu. But
he didn't seem to be eating what they were feeding.
And then he was beating the walls.
He was. And Gordon explains that he's lucky they have kept him alive. But now that they've found her, Sky, that is, they really aren't focused on Cal anymore. But Cal explains that he forgives Gordon. That was nice of him. And that if he takes him to his Daisy, everything will work out. He wants his daughter. And he gets the drop on Gordon, our blind inhuman. But with his unfair advantage, as Cal calls it, he bamps away and gets the upper hand again.
I was glad that Cal hit him. Nothing against the actor. The character of Gordon is one that I find a little pompous. And the fact that Cal, who has rage issues, hit him, I'm okay with that.
It's that inhuman pride, Matt. But Gordon explains that all of this is because Cal lacks self-control and that he has sealed his fate and the fate of his daughter as well as the act ends.
Boom.
As we move on to Act 4, Coulson and Hunter are dressed in S.H.I.E.L.D. tactical gear and look surprisingly like Colonial Marines from Battlestar Galactica.
The idea that they're trying to just sneak in, I think is something within the moment of the scene we, the audience, buy because we're sympathetic to these two guys. Let's not forget, though, that there was that previous scene of Gonzalez saying something is up. Why would he do this? You know, essentially Gonzalez saying, be prepared, you know, expect the unexpected, be prepared for something strange to happen. So the fact that Coulson and Hunter are quickly caught in 2 seconds by the decloaking plane, is consistent within this chess game that Coulson and Gonzalez are playing, and B starts to set up a brief concern I had for the story, which is, so now Coulson's going to get caught and just brought back to HQ. Like, why did he leave in the first place? The fact that it looks like we've just been counting time here in the story to do something with Coulson. Coulson escapes and Coulson brought back is a nice setup for the zinger that will be coming in a bit.
And there's a real sense of urgency, not only with the fact that they've been caught, but that, you know, Simmons and Bobby are closing in on whatever is in this cube at this point. And when Coulson and Hunter are brought on to the Quinjet to be taken back to the Iliad, backup arrives.
Reference, of course, was made to a third person on the way, and I think the show mentioned that appropriately. It in no way was hidden, but also with all these balls in the air, I think it was easy to forget that. And then when that hand comes up and it's like, but who in the world could pull down the back of a jet? And it's that reveal of Peterson, about to be named Agent Peterson. It's just such a wonderful moment. It speaks to the richness of this world that somebody who, correct me if I'm wrong, Pete, if not the first character seen in the pilot, you know, certainly shown in the first, you know, 60 seconds or so, and the fact that he's still around as a character, still contributing to the story in presumably bigger ways than we even knew. He's been an agent in the background for much of this time. Just a really, really, really nice touch and a really nice development.
He is the second ever character seen on the TV show. Ace, his son, was the first. Sky has a voiceover as the show begins proper explaining the situation. But having just watched the pilot again and watched his first episode back, The Bridge, after he had been made a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent, and we've now come really full circle. He went to the dark side. He did the whole Deathlok thing. He got his robot leg and his eye and everything else. He was working alongside, the clairvoyant and Reyna and everything there last year, Ward as well. And for him to come back now, I think you had to call him Agent Peterson here and establish, okay, he's on our side. And then with what Coulson explains that, you know, after, of course, this quick but pretty good fight that results in one of Peterson's gauntlet goodies going into the plane and taking it down before he gets on there and learns how to fly it Matrix style by downloading a program to his iSpy there with the backscatter and all that. It was an effective reveal. I went back and watched that stuff because I knew we were coming to this, and I feel that with the nature of the character, it really worked.
You know, Pete, a couple of months ago, we got together with a listener who I know flies planes for a living. I wonder what he would take in the notion that, sure, you can fly a Quinjet after just a quick, you know, quick over-the-air upload to your brain computer. I suppose
probably a fence if I know him well enough. But
it's the sci. They're leaning on the sci-fi here.
They are, and you know that you get a personality in Hunter who's around Mike Peterson for the first time. You know, with the line, you might have explained that Backup was a lethal cyborg.
And Pete, from that action-packed fight, we now have Gonzalez proved right yet again. He's unsurprised that there is another power person out there. We know that Phil Coulson is not building an army of super people to, you know, fight the system or to fight things or whatever, you know, his alien brain chip commands him to do. But fair is fair. It sure does look a lot like that for one Robert Gonzalez.
Back at Afterlife, there's no pizza that night, but there's no kale either. And, you know, really, I don't see the problem with kale. I love it.
They're just trying to be healthy. I mean, although Gordon just can't hop over and pick up a pie, like, really? Really? Heck, they can't make their own pizza? Come on now. They're all sitting around, you know, Lotus style, doing whatever, doing Karate Kid stuff. You can't just have somebody wax on, wax off until it's like, oh, look, now I chopped enough onions, let's do a pie here. But I digress.
Well, Lincoln warmed up a pool once, and I have a feeling we're going to see that story at some point. But this is where the lie about who else is at Lyche comes out, that Raina is indeed there. Sky is incensed, of course, because people have died because of her. But Lincoln and others in a moment fall back on the side that she is one of us, one of them. And old Daisy starts to quake a little bit. Of course, Raina is in the unused transition room, which was previously home to Chekhov. And she tells Raina that she got what she deserved. And Raina comes back at her with, you wanted to go into that chamber too. You weren't exactly dragged in kicking and screaming. That she is the same as her, and that the way she appears on the outside is the way that Sky appears on the inside. And through the bickering, a woman yells, enough. And what do you know, Matt? It is Sky's once thought to be deceased mommy, Jai Ying.
I thought that was just a wonderful act and a big surprise. I know, Pete, you commented off air that the actress was credited, and usually that's something that I catch and then I feel spoiled and upset at the world and whatnot. But how I missed that one, I don't know. But I was glad I did, because everything you said is true. We thought she was dead. Now all of a sudden, Sky and her mother face to face, and, you know, shades of Darth Vader and Princess Leia. The daughter does not recognize the parent as the, you know, for the parent that stands before her. And it's another note with which to end the act.
My name is Jia Yang begins Act 5 here. So we establish that this woman is indeed Sky's mother. We see faint looking scars, at least in the scene. They were a little more pronounced in a later scene. But she explains that Reyna is capable of beauty and greatness the same as Sky. So she is protective of all her inhuman children. And the idea of being capable of hurting people makes them one of them as well.
Pete, I will be the first one to cop to, you know, if I've missed something during an episode because I was tweeting, because I was taking notes, et cetera, et cetera. Neither of those were occurring in this scene when Jia Ying first comes in. I completely missed the scars in her face in this scene to the point that I had asked you in a subsequent scene, were they there in the previous scene? So I'm glad that you're confirming that they were. I would be interested to go back. Maybe it's just something I missed despite watching. Maybe it was not as clear as it should have been. I don't know. I'll tell you what was clear to me, Pete, and I hate to be critical in this regard, but Daikin Lockman's performance in this scene I thought was underwhelming. I thought that she, who you know, she has previously been wonderful in her prior episodes. Here, I think she just kind of lacked authority, lacked presence. And I felt like it was obvious she was acting the whole time. Yeah, and I hate to say that. I hate to be a downer. It's one thing if it's like, oh, they're holding the ID upside down. All right, who cares? Yeah, I kind of hate to call the actress out on the carpet here, but I did not find her performance particularly convincing here.
I wasn't caught up in the performance so much as I was caught up in, okay, we're getting her back here with the reveal. And I get it. We're going to reunite Sky with her mom and what happens in a minute when she explains that, okay, Sky, if you remain with us, great. You know, I'll be your guide. I've been chosen to be your guide. If you don't feel a connection worth exploring, you can go. We all know that's not going to happen. But seeing her again, this is what, the third or fourth time this season she's popped up. I just don't feel like we've seen her enough consistently that I'm immediately supposed to recognize her, especially with the makeup now, given that the character's dead. And we're significantly past the time frame in which she lived. And you take it into the act break and, you know, maybe that's by design. Okay, we're going to show it to her. And that's why she has to say, oh, and my name is this. And then we have to have a scene in a minute with Cal where she says, you were right. Daisy is our daughter.
I will disagree on that regard. I certainly don't know her from her other work, which is accomplished and a decade old. I think that her mixture of Tibetan and German via Australian features, it's so striking, so unique. I certainly recognized her as she walked through the door there, recognized the actress, recognized the character and so forth. But, I mean, the fact that you and I are both expressing a certain lack of clarity with some aspects of her return, look, the fact that they then quickly expositionize to make things clear, I suppose, you know, it was a solution at the end of the day. But I agree, it just didn't quite have the snap of, look, Lucy Lawless is back. She was dead and now she's not because it's the past. Got it.
But when she meets with Cal, who's really at the end of his rope here, given that apart from when he's been trying to get Sky back from Coulson, we've not seen him as low as he is right now, to then be put in his place by Jia Yang, okay, who will not allow him to see Sky or Daisy, as he calls her. You know, that's really the most effective thing that happened with this whole storyline tonight for me.
There, her sense of power and authority, I think, was unquestioned. Absolutely, that double, you know, hey, you've done a good job. No, you can't see your daughter. It was just, I was surprised by it. I think we're meant to be surprised because it's unclear his connection to this. He hugged her with a sense of, I mean, obviously he recognized her, but it wasn't like, what? I thought you were dead for the last 20 years. So there's wonderful confusion going on here, intentional confusion going on, and it's it really is nice.
Where are they keeping David A. Angar on this Lyshae compound? That's what I want to know. But we're back to the Iliad as one of the plains lands looks a lot like the bus. And May and Gonzalez have their final scene of the episode. He pulls out a gun, which he explains as only Edward James almost could, that had belonged to his father in the Second World War. He killed 100 Nazis with that gun, Matt. Okay. And he said it found the right target at the right time, and he puts it on the table and he slides it down. And May explains that she's not going to do this. That even with the gun provided, that this is not going to happen. And that's when Gonzalez comes clean with the recommendation that's been made to him to offer her a seat on their board at Real Shield, because they're going to be bringing Coulson in, and he's going to need a strong advocate on the board when they do bring him in for whatever tribunal or justice he might face. May slides the gun back down. She explains that she appreciates the theatrics, but he knows, or she knows rather, that he's not stupid enough to hand her a loaded gun. Then what happened, Matt?
With that, he I'm going to use my gun words here that I've learned from our pal Mike Sorensen, who always shares all that gun information on Twitter. He ejects the magazine and then further other area ejects the shelled bullet. Nice, lack of vocabulary aside, nice sound design in this scene, because when that magazine falls out, it's not just thud, it's clunk. When that, unfired bullet still in its casing, comes out, it lands with a clank to just really hammer home, you know, no, this is a shooting gun. This is a real gun with real bullets, and meant to do the dirty deed and to do it well. Further, I want to point out that the notion of May joining the board, that something will happen to Coulson, well, Coulson's not caught yet. Coulson doesn't seem to be caught anytime soon. More suggestion that there's going to be a merging of the shields ahead at some point, that Gonzalez is going to be a character that sticks around for at least the rest of the season, and we have tons of time left if they are going to, you know, not continue Edward James almost past May, but tons of story potential here ahead for a lot of these characters and situations on the Shield end of the story.
But this is about Shield, Matt, as he makes it clear, and it's at that point that we get him speaking in a montage of Fitz with a rather prominent backpack that, if you didn't see right away and know what was going to be in there, well, I feel sorry for you. And Gonzalez,
and Pete, who puts the backpack on him?
Who did put the backpack on him? The same one who packed him a sandwich, but we'll come to that in full disclosure in a moment. Gonzalez says that a house built on shifting sand will fall, and we see Coulson in the Quinjet, and he tells Hunter that Peterson has been overseas working for him for the last 6 months, and they're down to their bad option, Matt.
Pete, the big reveal, which is a surprise when they say it, but listeners to the podcast won't be as surprised. It's the return of potential good guy Grant Ward?
What's this potential nonsense, Matt?
Pete, it is a theory that you floated a long time ago that I quickly realized is a logical way for the, you know, for the functions of the story and the demands of the story to keep the character and the actor in the series. And Pete, I got a little preview for next week's podcast, just the full kind of coronation of spoiler Pete. Just a little, just take a listen here, because you'll hear more of this next week.
Need to get back to the place I belong.
Because Grant Ward clearly coming home to the bosom of his fellow agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Being brought home, no less.
Indeed. Exciting times ahead. Because, look, I've constantly been anti-Ward, but pro Brett Dalton. I don't want to see this guy kind of, you know, drummed out of the show. I don't want him to be the Bradley Cooper of Alias, underused, misused, quickly exited. Brett Dalton should be on this show, and I'm glad that here at long last, the enemy of the enemy is my friend. And, you know, Ward's coming home, Pete. He's coming home.
Matt, have you been looking ahead at episode titles?
Pete, I can honestly say I absolutely have not. I just know that director Phil Coulson said, get me some Grant Ward, and they're serving him up, and it's coming.
Because you nearly just spoke an episode title from the end of the month.
Wow. Well, I have not looked ahead. Honest Abe here.
Wow. Our tag scene features Gemma Simmons explaining that everything she's done here to try to open up the cube has not worked. Without Coulson, it must just be a piece of junk. Cue Fitz getting in the cab, taking him to the airport. And of course, he opens the bag. Nice work, Gemma. Not only is there Fury's toolbox, but there is also a special sandwich with just a hint of pesto aioli.
Pete, this is just such a wonderful end to the episode. It's a callback, of course, to the sandwich bit from, you know, the middle of the first season before things got really hopping. It's a reminder of the bond that the two of them had, and the fact that they're both doing the right thing. This is the reunion of Fitzsimmons as one word, and just a cheerworthy way to end the episode.
A detailed look at our bad guys. We begin again, Matt, with Robert Gonzalez, who, though he may not be a bad guy proper, he is certainly acting in opposition of our team as the primary antagonist in this episode.
Definitely agree that he is the primary antagonist, but I think the show is really making a concerted effort to sell his side of the story, his perspective. And, you know, if we are headed towards the presence of this character, or at the very least some sort of structure like a board to be governing S.H.I.E.L.D. in the future, I am okay with that. I think that the points he raises continue to be legitimate ones, and ones where, you know, if we are fans of S.H.I.E.L.D., the organization that has been so, you know, so spoken ill of because of the Hydra debacle, he is doing things for the positive, or at least he wants to move things in a positive direction.
But Matt, don't we have those tyrants who act under the guise of democracy? Oh, you know, we're going to have free and democratic elections. And then what do you know? Saddam Hussein is reelected by a massive majority.
Pete, I know we have a couple of listeners who probably could find examples closer than that, but that's the Fantastic Geek Politics podcast coming never. Yes, that's an argument to make. I mean, certainly we shall see. Here's the story sense that I'm getting. If the show wants to have some sort of grand surprise from him, okay, you could do that. I feel like, well, you already did that with Ward. So I think you're somewhat limited for, like, the good guy is actually a bad guy. I don't think you can do that this season. Certainly not in a major way. I think the show that was forced to evolve in the first season from standalone episodes to something more serial, I think is smart to be pushing itself to evolve again. And I think that kind of, you know, the shield that came in from the cold storyline has certainly served itself well for a post-Cap, Cap 2 rather, Marvel Cinematic Universe. But that's going to be less fun if they're the secret ragtag fleet. That's going to be less fun to be this ongoing thing. So if it is going to be more formalized and the two become one and now Shield, one Shield, and we all sing songs and work together, if that's where we're headed for season three, I'm cool with that.
We had OG Kree early in this podcast, and now, Matt, it ain't nothing but a G thing, Gordon in the crosshairs of the dossier.
I think there definitely is a time, there's going to come a time where his villainy or his villainous side is revealed. I think we're getting a sense of that. In his early episodes, it was very, you know, do not be a fisher of fish, be a fisher of inhumans. Come with me. They've backed off on that a little bit. The satisfaction that I, and I suspect many others, got from seeing him, you know, hit by Dr. Cal, I think is a clue to us that there's something up with this character that we can't quite define yet, but that is shining through from the show in terms of not trusting him.
And the theme, I think, is a through line between Gonzalez and Gordon. It's, you know, once again, masquerading behind the idea of choice. And this isn't so much choice, oh, you tell me you want your help, as opposed to forced consent.
This is completely unrelated, but I just had the mental image of Gonzalez's mustache across Gordon's eye anti-sockets, and how silly that would look. But that's interesting, though, a notion that they're essentially not the same character, of course, but kind of the same type of person. Which I suppose is true, because the fact that, oh, this isn't a prison, Gordon is just the only way in or out, and you don't know where you are. And, hey, if there's trouble, then there's no Chicago deep dish pizza. And that's a similar philosophy that Gonzalez is running with. You know, hey, Fitzsimmons, you're so great. Oh, you didn't want to help, snarl. Certainly, I think that's a story thread to keep an eye on in the future, particularly since Gonzalez is part of the board and Gordon is either a part of or represents or works for some kind of combination there for these elders that are governing the community.
I think that Lincoln winds up in our dossier tonight only because we have not seen the full extent of his powers, and given that he is aligned with Gordon and these elders, and a character we're going to talk about in a minute here in Sky's Mother, you know, what he can do and his motivations even more so have to be called into question.
Totally, totally agree. Specifically agree that he should be on the dossier, but isn't necessarily a full bad guy. But if push comes to shove, I think we know where his loyalties lie, and it kind of seems unreasonable that Sky is going to be completely won over by these people. And, you know, next season there's going to be like the main show, then there's going to be like a different world, and Sky goes to, like, you know, Inhuman College, and whatnot. And occasionally she comes back and visits the main bunch on the main show. Like, clearly this is a situation meant for conflict and meant for Skye returning along with her metaphorical brother Ward.
How about Jia Yang? We did not expect to see her. At least you didn't, Matt. But for her to show up and the really not the power that she exerts over Cal, but she has the knowledge and she has the upper hand in that she is aligned with whoever is running afterlife and keeping Cal in his place.
I'm nervous of her statement, which is in opposition to Skye's statement of, you know, we are all the same. I shouldn't use the word inhuman, of course, but I'll use that. Saying, you know, we are all inhumans, therefore we have to help Reyna along, as opposed to some sort of more objective idea that, you know, Reyna has killed X number of people. That kind of suggests she's bad, because Skye has killed, by my count off the top of my head, Pete, zero people. So, you know, which one of those people is living the more just life and can be trusted more? Jia Ying's response is, well, we're all this special breed, so the rules don't apply. You know, thanks, Magneto. That sounds awfully convenient.
It does. And how about Cal? You know, we've seen him down before, manic, really, but to see him in a position where he's, I mean, Matt, he's a caged animal right now.
I love that this show, or I love, frankly, when any story, any show can make you feel sympathetic for people who you did not previously like. And the notion that, you know, here's a guy whose motives we by and large understand, death, and now in quotes, but death of his wife, loss of his child, so on and so forth. And he's been trying to right those wrongs, and, you know, he's had the lonely man theme playing for all these many decades, and, you know, so on and so forth. We sympathize with him to that degree. Still, he's done bad things, okay. But to then, as you know, as you said, Pete, for him to be this caged animal, hands bloodied, I think that's just such a wonderful effect of how long has he spent pounding away at those walls and can't get out. And you kind of imagine how frustrating it would be for a normal person to just be there, you know, hour after hour, day after day. You know, for goodness sake, Pete, I don't even think they give him like Netflix, you know. So how can, so how can he watch Daredevil and enjoy the Daredevil podcast? But I mean, just this notion that he really is imprisoned, and for a normal person that would be difficult, let alone somebody of such explosive personality.
Welcome to Level 7.
Time to analyze and theorize.
Pete, you know what is no theory before we dive on in is that if you, dear listener, would like to help the podcast, you can head over to patreon.com/fantasticgeek. That's patreon.com/fantasticgeek and help us with our storage and bandwidth costs, all those internet tube thingies that get the podcast from our microphones into your ear devices. You can give a little, you can give a lot. Certainly giving a little helps helps things go a long way. And we have a couple of ways to say thank you on our Patreon page. But Pete, most importantly, are the secrets of Level 7 in tonight's episode.
Yes. What is going on with Lincoln? What are his powers? I think the idea that he can do subtle electric stuff, not all that simple.
There certainly is flexibility in the dialogue where it's not just like, I do static electricity. That is his example of one way he can focus this energy. I think it's written in a very careful way to leave you with the impression of, oh, I can give tingles in your body and make you float a little bit, but they've left themselves intentional room for it to be a whole lot more. The nature of that, I'm not quite sure, but I think we're in for one heck of a special effects battle in the final episodes where Sky is sending kind of, you know, blurry quake waves and he's sending crackling electricity, perhaps from his fingertips. You know, maybe somebody will get thrown down to the reactor core. It's exciting times here.
It is. Matt, how about Mike Peterson? Lot made of the reveal tonight. What exactly has he been doing overseas? Hanging out maybe with a formerly eye-patched, leather-jacketed, wearing mofo?
That would be absolutely fantastic. I think if there's any solid, tangible connection to Avengers Age of Ultron, it'll be in a return of Samuel L. Jackson. It would probably, in my opinion, be a nice tradition where, you know, he shows up at the end of a season to have whatever input or whatnot. He just seems so gleeful, Mr. Jackson does, to kind of be participating in all these things. And the idea that the two of them have been palling around, going after, you know, Hydra folks. I think it's, they can maybe like flash back to that for a second, like some sort of slow motion, you know, pew, pew kind of scene. It'd be absolutely fantastic.
Tired of these mofo Hydra on this mofo plane.
Appropriately said.
Time to check the wires, Matt, and we love to hear from our listeners. When you leave us feedback on iTunes, you not only help us, but you help others find us. And we have one review left for us this week by Condemned001. This was left on April 5th. The headline is "Can't Be Beaten," 5 stars. And the review reads, "These guys really know their agents. If you want a fun and informative podcast about AOS, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., okay, then look no further. Thanks, guys. Y'all really helped me get through the long work week."
Those are always such wonderful messages to hear when it's that kind of integration into people's experience, you know, commutes and work week and work, all that stuff. So very, very appreciated to hear that from today's reviewer. Pete just wanted to share one other decrypted transmission. This from Mary on Twitter, who goes by at Joan Busher, B-U-S-H-E-R, Joan B-U-S-H-E-R. And she said at the end of the episode, "Someone just had a geekgasm. Hashtag Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D." I think that's how many of us are feeling after this really just rock and roller coaster episode.
Indeed.
With that, Pete, I have a question for you. How can people have their own geekgasms by being in touch with you on Twitter?
You can find me on Twitter at Peter, P-I-E-T-E-R, J. Ketelaar, K-E-T-E-L-A-A-R, 5,561 followers. Can't be wrong.
Wow. It goes ever upward, ever upward. And while I am, of course, personally on Twitter as Looking Back Lost, you can be in touch with the podcast with a variety of ways. We are Fantastic Geek, that's fantastic with a P-H, on the .com, Twitter, and Gmail. And of course, Pete, one more fabulous way.
Do you like what you hear, listeners? Because if you do, there is a way to make it official. Head over to facebook.com/fantasticgeek with a PH, all one word. Hit the like button and prove it.
Pete, before we head out, a reminder to everybody, this Friday we are kicking off the Daredevil podcast as that series premieres on Netflix worldwide. We've had a number of questions as to how and where and when we will be podcasting the episode. This upcoming weekend, we'll be doing episode 101 on Friday, episode 102 on Saturday, and episode 103 on Sunday. Then the following Friday, will be episode 104. And from there, every Friday and Monday, we will be releasing subsequent episodes of that. If you only listen to us through the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. feed, you won't be getting Daredevil there because he's not an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. So you could either head to FantasticGeek.com or head over to iTunes for the info on either the Daredevil podcast or our pop culture podcast. Because, of course, anything that we do is always simulcast on the pop culture podcast. And it's also a great way, the pop culture podcast is, to get some extra goodies along the way. Visits to Comic-Con, nerd breaking news now and then, things that might just tickle our fancy. I know we've discussed Pete in June or July talking over a couple Star Wars topics. So the geekiness abounds there on the Pop Culture Podcast.
Yes, I did the numbers today. This is the first of 21 podcasts in the next 44 calendar days. So, yeah, there's that.
Fun, fun, fun. And you know what else is fun, Pete? Is it's now time to say to all our listeners, Yilu Pingang, one and all. And with that, Pete, I will give you your famous final word.
I want a window!